Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show. We talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happy, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us today. Folks, I just want to start out by saying this. When we decided to have this topic on and we put out our guest information, we had over 1,000 emails. That says a lot for the topic itself. And it says a lot of people are interested. And you know what? I want to first of all introduce you to Robert Siciliano. He's a cybersecurity expert, good hacker. I want to say he's a good hacker guy because most people don't know there's good hackers out there. He's a private investigator. The big thing about Robert is he delivers straight talk on safety, security, stripping away jargon to empower everyday protection. He's a best-selling author and CEO of Safe, that's SAFR.me, and head trainer at Protect Now. He is a trusted commentator featured on CNN, Fox, CNBC, The Today Show, decoding complex threats for the mass audience. You know what? And by the way, Robert does have a best-selling book. It's called The Strategic Human Firewall. You might want to check it out if you hear all this. Robert, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be here.
Okay. So out of our 1,000 emails, 120, 530 of them came in. And they said, you know what? It won't happen to me.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I've been interviewing people. I've actually been interviewed before in other stations about these things, but you are the expert. Please, let's start talking about that topic right at the beginning. It won't happen to me.
Yeah. So, look, nobody wants to ever believe ever that they would become a victim of a crime, right? Nobody ever wants to think that a predator, a sociopath, or a psychopath would choose them. Nobody wants to think that they would get cancer. We don't ever want to think that bad things are going to happen to us. Look, as human beings, we gravitate towards pleasure and away from pain. Pain isn't something we want to think about. We just want to watch Dancing with the Stars, hang out with our kids, and not engage in being vulnerable, right? And there's reasons behind all that, right? Biological reasons, okay? So when I do a live presentation in front of an audience, I ask them a number of qualifying questions, questions that are designed to challenge their belief systems. Because what people think security is versus what it isn't, part of my role is to change people's cultural understanding of security. Okay. And so some of those questions are like, okay, so how many of you have a home security system? Personal security. And that question is always met with maybe 10, 15% of the room has a home security system. And I say, okay, so why don't you have a home security system? So I ask the audience, we engage in a dialogue and the hands begin to go up. Oh, we don't have a home security system because we have insurance. As if insurance is going to protect you at 3 a.m. So kind of not well thought out. And then they say, okay, we don't have a home security system because my husband says, if they're going to break in, they're going to break in. What are we going to do? We really can't prevent it anyways, which he's using fatalism to actually justify his lack of investment in a security system. And I say, I divorce that guy. Okay. And then the most common answer that I get, oh, we don't have a home security system because I don't want to live like that. I just want to trust people. I don't want to have to worry. I don't want to live in fear, as if installing a home security system is going to make you afraid. And so I say, okay, and this is actually true. I go, okay, so I'm a guy that actually has 20 plus security cameras in my home. So outside, inside the home in total, about 20 cameras. Not much different than any new restaurant or building that you'd attend today, right? And so I go, so when I say that, 20 plus cameras, and I ask the whole audience, what do you think my makeup is, my mindset? I wake up every day with 20 plus security cameras. I must be what? And what do you think they say, Steve?
Nuts.
Nuts. What's another word for nuts?
Crazy.
paranoid? Usually the whole audience goes paranoid and they kind of laugh. Oh, we just called him paranoid. The reality is we as a culture, we as a society have a very unhealthy relationship with security because we think security is about being paranoid. And paranoia, I think you probably already know, the medical communities have diagnosed paranoia as a mental health disease. It is the unjustified view that you are being persecuted, that people are out to get you, that you're always looking over your shoulder because somebody's trying to hurt and harm you at all times. The people who live with this disease, they truly live on red alert all the time. And medication sometimes or sometimes does not actually fix the problem. It's a horrible disease to live with. And I have family that are affected by this, so I understand how it works. That said, we as a culture think that security is about that. I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live in fear because we don't really know what security is. And what security is, it's about gaining a degree of control. It's about putting systems in place. Somebody who's paranoid is out of control. Somebody who engages in security practices, they're executing systems in place and strategies to actually thwart the bad guy. It's managing risk. It's no different than putting a seatbelt on to give you control over that vehicle should the car swerve in front of you and you want to be tight in the seat in control of the steering wheel, the gas, and the brakes. Because if you were to swerve too, you could end up in the passenger seat. Now you have no control over the vehicle. And that's really all security is. It's about just gaining a little bit of control. But because of our unhealthy view of security, we think of it as a bad thing. And as a result, what we do is we go, it's not going to happen to me anyways. And I don't want to think about those things. And denial actually is wonderful. Denial allows us, it's a psychological condition that we all possess to a certain degree. Everybody has a certain level of denial for all kinds of stuff. Denial allows us to avoid threats and anxiety and risks. It allows us to put the cover over our heads. It's great, but it's not good when it comes to security. And knowing that there are bad actors out there, there always has been, there is, and there always will be, that they're always looking for their next victim, it's important to recognize what they do, how they choose their victims, and what you need to do, systems you need to put in place to reduce that risk. And don't function in denial. It can happen to you. Chances of it happening are kind of slim, but it can. And then know what your options are.
So let's just take this next step. What are people looking for, or what are the criminals looking for their next victim?
What they love is those who say, it can't happen to me. They love that. You know why they love that? Because that same person probably doesn't lock the doors. They probably don't have a home security system. They probably use the same passcode across multiple accounts. They're probably not using two-factor authentication. They're probably using an older, outdated device. They don't know how to update their operating system. They don't know how to do it themselves. They don't know how to install basic levels of encryption. They don't engage in what we would consider the best practices of digital literacy as it relates to cybersecurity or personal protection, because they just want to be free and live free and don't worry. And that's not what this is. You don't worry when you drive. You're not paranoid behind the wheel. You just do it. Life requires a degree of, look at an Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. On the base of that triangle is our physiological needs. It's like eating food, drinking fluids. It's getting a good night's rest. You can't survive without that. Right above that is safety, security, stability, structure, and protection. Above that becomes love and belongingness, self-actualization, all that fun stuff, right? But literally, you cannot achieve any of those other things without satisfying your physiological or your safety and security needs. But in our culture, we take all that stuff for granted. We truly take that stuff for granted. And to the point where we do nothing. And the bad actors love that you do nothing. They want you to do nothing. At the end of every one of my presentations, I tell the entire audience, listen, don't worry about anything we've ever said, but do something about it. The worst thing you can do is nothing. The best thing you can do is pay attention here today, listen in, take some notes. And if you do the basic things I'm talking about today, you can become part of the top 10% of secure Americans. Literally, top 10%. Because 90% are doing nothing. And if you do the 5 or 10 things we talk about, you become part of the top 10%. It is truly that easy.
I think that's interesting because I'm just thinking about all the different stories that people sent me emails on and told me about over the years. And I'm like going, yeah, that's right. These are the same people who will select that button when the alarm goes off or call that phone number when the alarm goes off to fix their computer when the person's actually it's set up for a scam. And you probably know about that one. But folks, hey, this is wonderful. Stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Saving with Steve and Robert Siciliano.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. We talk about the ins and outs of money. I'm just getting right back to it with Robert Siciliano. He's talking to us about the how to protect your money from AI scams, identity theft, and financial fraud. You know what? We want to talk a little bit about AI. And this new age of scams, and you know what? I understand why they're doing it. These scams, it grows at 20% or better per year. Why stop? That's why the scammers are looking at it. I bet you have some numbers on that.
Right now, we're at about $500 billion a year of fraud, right? Depending on the various stats you look at, okay? Projections are $12.1 trillion by 2031, right? That's how bad this is. So crime today is organized more than it ever has been. If you look at things like flash mobs, 30, 40 kids going into a retail environment and just knocking it out and just stealing everything, that is organized crime, organized retail crime, right? Organized crime when it comes to cyber has eclipsed the illicit drug trade. So when you think about cocaine and fentanyl and marijuana, that's all been eclipsed by cybercrime. They're making more money in cyber fraud than anything else. And there's a reason behind that. It's due to the fact that I'm sure many of your audience might be considered retirees, maybe even baby boomers. They invest their money. And Steve, you may be familiar with this. There is what is called $124 trillion transfer of wealth. The greatest transfer of wealth in humankind and human history is happening right now. As we speak, it's basically the next 15 plus years as the baby boomers who are moneyed and the silent or greatest generation who are moneyed and on their way out, so to speak, no offense, they for their entire adult lives saved their money. They understood compounded interest. They invested. They have annuities and they have Roth IRAs and they paid off their mortgages, right? And they're worth $124 trillion. As they pass, as they perish, younger generations, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, millennials, right? Me, my kids, right? From my dad, so to speak. That money will be passed on to us, hopefully. Or that's the way it goes, right? Or it goes to charity, how that works, right? That money is the target for organized crime now. That money is the target. They know that those generations, let's use baby boomers as an example, the most moneyed on the planet, right? The least technically savvy, the most trusting human beings on the planet, right? They are 25% of them and 25% of all humans are lonely when they wake up and get out of bed every day, okay? Mm-hmm. So moneyed, most trusting, least technically savvy, okay? And as a result, when you get those wrong number text messages, hey, Robert, are we supposed to be meeting for lunch tomorrow? And you're like, I'm sorry, who's this? And they're like, oh, do I have the wrong number? And they respond with, oh, this is Gloria. I'm sorry, Robert. This is Gloria. Where are you at, Robert? And the dialogue begins because they know if Robert is lonely, looking for companionship, that Robert's looking at Gloria's photo. He's, whoa, hey, Gloria, I'm in Boston, Massachusetts. Like, where are you at? Nice to meet you. And the dialogue begins. And so for 8 to 10 hours a day, Gloria and Robert are corresponding. Gloria is sending text messages of herself all day, every day, like having breakfast, at yoga, with her girlfriends, shopping, like whatever she's doing. And it's every day. Good morning, Robert. How are you today? And then before you go to bed, good night, Robert. I hope you sleep well today. And like after 8, 10, 12 communications a day, that's 80, 100 communications a week. If Robert started out lonely, how's he doing after 2 weeks with Gloria in his life? He's not lonely.
Not too lonely.
And Gloria, after a couple of weeks, says, hey, Robert, I know you work really hard for your money and you've saved up all this money. Have you thought about cryptocurrency? Have you thought about investing in gold? Gloria, I've been investing in cryptocurrency now for about 5 years and I'm making 80% in my investment. If you want, I could show you how to do it. It's really easy, actually. And she sends a picture of her phone screen with like all the apps that she wants Robert to download. And then she walks Robert step by step through the process of exactly how to connect his bank accounts to the crypto apps. And eventually, because Gloria is so smart and so wonderful, she'll actually help Robert make all that money and show him exactly how to do it. And all of that process that I just talked about, the text message going out, the photo being sent, the dialogue back and forth to Robert via text message, all of that is done with artificial intelligence, utilizing deep fakes and voice cloning. It's perfect. And it's equating to hundreds of billions of dollars every single year in fraud, because the victim in this case doesn't want to believe or think it'll ever happen to them. It's really how it begins and how it starts. And the victim hasn't listened to a podcast like this and has no idea with what happens to them. And when it happens, you know what, when it happens, because I work with victims all the time, 100% of the time when I work with victims, you know what they say every single time? I kind of knew something was wrong at one point. And I can't believe how stupid I was that I got victimized. And I say, you know what? I don't think that you're stupid at all. I think you're human. I think it's normal and I think it's natural. But what most people don't understand is these predators are sociopaths and psychopaths. They are hardcore narcissists that don't experience empathy, sympathy, guilt, or remorse. And they know that most of us do nothing. They know that most of us don't manage our passwords effectively, lock our doors, have two-factor authentication, do nothing. And they know that you're just hungry for communication with another human being, because that's what we are. We're social creatures. And if they prey upon your biology, then it's just a matter of time until they liquidate your bank account.
And then most people don't even report it because they're so embarrassed.
Yeah. Look, AI has stripped away the clumsy red flags of traditional fraud. In the past, criminals relied on what we call blunder force phishing, which essentially is mass blasting emails riddled with scammer grammar. Today, generative AI allows for high precision impersonation, essentially at scale. Criminals now use what we call neural puppetry to create perfect lies by scraping just seconds of audio or video from social media. And they use voice cloning and deep fakes to impersonate a trusted source, like a spouse, a CEO, an attorney, your financial advisor, with 95% accuracy. And this weaponizes our biological default to trust, making the deception feel 100% human. Further, AI automates the grooming process. Like I mentioned, like all those text messages back and forth throughout the day, using normalizing dialogue. Hey, I'm going to the grocery store. This is what I like to eat. I'm organic. I eat lots of leafy vegetables. Dialogue designed to build rapport and exploit, like I mentioned, the loneliness loophole, and removes all the manual labor of social engineering, allowing a single predator to pilot thousands of digital puppets simultaneously, bypassing technical firewalls and hacking the human and bypassing all your firewalls.
Wow. Because I'm just thinking of the number of stories I've heard from people that stuff like that has happened. And one of them, she lost $400,000 to pretty much the investment scam piece. And she wouldn't even report it until the IRS says, you're going to have to pay taxes on this money you took out of your IRA. And then she filed the police reports and the FCC stuff and things like that. Otherwise, she would have been out another $125,000 due to taxes.
And she thought she was going to make that money back and then some. And so she never even considered the tax implications because as far as she was concerned, that 400 grand was probably going to turn into 2-3 million over the course of a few months, which is what she was promised. I've met those same exact victims. I'm the guy that the financial service professional hires to come down and speak to his people live because they keep clicking the links. They keep downloading the files. They keep responding to the pop-ups. They keep getting hooked by these scams. And so the advisor wants his people to understand, hey, stop what you're doing. This guy knows what he's talking about. Pay attention. This is what's happening right now. This is what you need to be aware of and why before something bad happens. But I'm hired because something bad happened. And so at the end of the presentation, that couple comes up to me and they're like fit. They're in the mid 70s. They look like they have it all together. But when you look at the wife who's just lost 600 grand, you could tell. She is broken. She's broken because here she is in her mid 70s. She's got to get a job now. Her and her husband are going bankrupt. They've lost everything. They mortgaged their house thinking that they were like heading into Easy Street or Easier Street. And now it's all come crashing down. Why? Because they clicked a link. They opened up an email. They responded to a text message. And they engaged in a predator's dialogue for months, not knowing what was happening to them, not understanding biologically, emotionally, psychologically, the spell they were under, which is what happens to people.
That's nuts. Robert, I want to talk about this thing that everybody hears about called the dark web. Okay.
Yeah.
What is it? And let's kind of help people with a little reality check of what it really means to them.
Okay, so everybody uses Google for search, right? So Google searches the available internet, right? Google searches the navigable web that they actually can get paid on. Meaning Google has set up what they consider, okay, this is the extent of the internet that we're going to provide to you in the Google search. And as a result, we're going to serve up ads based on that criteria. Okay. And so there's a part of the web that Google doesn't actually provide you access to because they can't make any money on it. It's not navigable from Google. It's a part of the web that you need special browsers to get access to. One of those browsers is called the Onion Router. The acronym, of course, is Tor, T-O-R. And if you download Tor, you can get access to the dark web. And on the dark web, you can find, it's basically the nefarious part of the web that Google doesn't search. And from there, you can buy people's sensitive information, social security numbers. You can buy illicit firearms, illicit drugs. You can engage in prostitution or get a hitman, whatever it is that you can think of. It's available on the dark web. Google is not going to index that stuff. They index the above board stuff, so to speak, right? And so on the dark web, there are criminals that are buying and selling and trading in our information as one of those commodities, right? Including guns and drugs and prostitution and our data. And people say, oh, I found that my information is in the dark web. What do I do? And I'm like, listen, water is wet. The sky is blue. Chocolate is yummy. Your information's in the dark web. It's just the way it is. Okay. I don't worry that my information's in the dark web. I know my information's in the dark web. I've had criminal hackers email me my social security number. Hey, security guy, here's your social, ha. Basically flexing their muscle, showing me how cool they are. I could care less. So what does that all mean to you, to your audience? It means that, yes, your information's in the dark web. The idea is that you make the data the bad guy has access to useless to the thief. So Steve, let me ask you a few questions. Play along with me if you don't mind, right? So if you find out that your password, because most people are using the same password across multiple accounts, if you find out that your password is on the dark web, how would you make that password useless to a thief?
Change it.
There you go. We're already heading towards that top 10%. What's another way to make a password? You might have a hard time with this one. It's okay if you do. What's another way to make your password useless to a thief?
Using second-party authentication.
Perfect. Excellent. In other words, two-factor authentication. So, Steve, like when you log in and then they say, okay, we're going to send you a text message. That text message is like that six-digit code. That six-digit code is that second factor. So even if the bad actor has your password, they need to have your mobile phone in many situations as that second factor in order to log in. So between changing up your passcodes and enabling two-factor authentication for all your criticals, generally you make your passwords useless to a thief. That's how you begin that process, okay? And I would like to talk about password management and two-factor authentication, but I'm on a roll here. So another way to make data useless to a thief is, okay, so Steve, if they have your social security number, generally, how would you protect yourself from new account fraud if they have your social security number? What would you do?
Put a lock on your social security number through the credit bureaus.
They call that a credit freeze. Exactly. All right. So getting a credit freeze does, in fact, make your social security number useless to the thief in regards to opening new lines of credit. By contacting Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, logging into their websites, setting up an account, freezing your credit, going forward, even if the bad actor has your social, they can't open up new lines of credit under your name. So I don't worry that the bad actors have my data. I just make it useless to the thief. So the dark web isn't something really to be concerned about. What you need to be concerned about is what to do in response to your data being in the bad actor's hands now. So going forward, you become a tougher target.
Okay, perfect. So what are the other things? We talked about passwords, and you know what? You change your password. Some people will change their password to one or two numbers different or a letter different or something like that. What type of password should somebody actually have to make it a little tougher?
Sure. So when I get in front of a live audience, 100 people, let's say, I ask the audience, a show of hands, how many of you actually have a different passcode across all your critical accounts? Raise your hand. If I get 10% of the room to raise their hand, that's a lot, which means 90% are using the same passcode. And then I say, okay, so how many of you are using a password manager? And it's usually about 10%, which those 10%, they are able to have a different passcode across multiple accounts. So I've been using a password manager at this point for 22 years, right? I don't know my passwords. My password manager knows my passwords. I could log into my password manager and I can see them if I wanted to. But my password manager just logs me into all the various websites that I visit on a regular basis because it takes me right to the URL. It goes right to the login page. It plugs in my username. It plugs in my password. It saves me time. No copying and pasting. It is secure. It is encrypted, right? And it creates long, strong, uppercase, lowercase, numbers and characters type passwords that I would never ever be able to remember unless I was some form of a savant, which I'm definitely not. That being said, a password manager is the tool that you use today to secure yourself across all your various accounts. And not only does a password manager change up your passcodes, give you long, strong passcodes, password managers also facilitate the new form of access control called passkeys. Passkeys are the next level of access that within the next 5 or more years is going to become standard across every website that we visit.
And what's a passkey access?
So a passkey is like entering a username and a passcode once and never having to do it again, because that website now verifies that you are you through your device's various credentials, such as MAC address, IP address, your initial username and passcode, maybe a biometric that you plugged into your phone or your device itself, along with a number of other factors that they use in the background to determine, okay, Robert Siciliano in these particular credentials and his hardware and his software and his location and his device's reputation, and everything about him all adds up. So going forward, this is going to be the crypto key, so to speak, for this particular website's login. And his password manager going forward is going to hold, or at least is going to provide that access.
Okay.
Lots of technical stuff going on there that you don't necessarily need to fully understand, as long as you know that it works.
I agree.
And so starting off with password managers and then two-factor authentication. Steve, when I asked that question, how many of you are using two-factor authentication for all your critical accounts, including your personal and professional email? If I get 15% of the room to raise their hand, that's a lot, which means 20%, which means 80% of the general population, 80 to 90% is not using two-factor, and they're not using a password manager, and they're not using a different password across multiple accounts. And what I tell people is, did you know that in the past 20 years, two decades, that there's about 300 billion of our records on the dark web? 300 billion with a B. Wow. Named addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, usernames, and passcodes. And guess how many passcodes there are? They say between 15 and 20 billion of our passwords on the dark web. And people go, oh, those poor people, who are they? They're passwords. And I'm like, who do you think they are? It's you. It's me. It's all of us. It's 20 billion passwords. It's not like some other guy in some other random state. It can't happen to me. It's you, dude, especially those that are using the same passcode across 20 sites. So bad actors, they don't hack today. They do. But to a large part, you know what they actually do? They log in. That's it. They grab your credentials, username, passcode, log in. Now they're in. And once they're inside your email, they don't lock you out. What do you think they do? They sit there and they lurk and they stalk and they wait and they watch and they read everything and they scan your email for everything. Who do you bank with? What financial service professionals do you work with? Do you work with Fidelity? Do you work with Merrill Lynch? Do you work with Schwab? They search all these keywords, right? They search Amazon and eBay. They're looking for login information. They want to see anything and everything they can about you. They want to know, are you with Coinbase? Are you with Binance? They want to know. And then they figure it all out. And then from your email, they start resetting the passcodes to all your other accounts. So if you're using the same passcode for email as you are for Facebook, as you are for some website you were on 20 years ago, they know who you are. So what do you do now? Change up your passcodes, set up two-factor authentication for everything, and use a password manager to do it. You're already on your way to being in the top 10% if you do that stuff.
And once they find out you have that, they're going to leave you alone.
They're going to leave you alone. You become a tougher target. Look, Steve, I've had a home security system for 30 plus years. And not only do I have a home security system, I get signage in the front of my house that says, beware of dog. This house protected by a home security system, whatever the name is, right? I have motion sensing lighting. I have like all of these layers of protection. So when a bad actor, somebody hyped up and hopped up on oxys, comes down the street looking for their next fix, and they see my house, right? And then they see the guy next door who's dark and dingy and it looks kind of unoccupied. There's nothing going on over there. Whose house do you think they're going to break in?
It's always an easy target.
Always. It's always an easy target. This is all about becoming a tougher target. It's not about worrying about things. It's not about living in fear. It's not about functioning in denial. It's about making better choices, Steve. That's all this is. It's so simple.
Folks, hey, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve and Robert Siciliano.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We're right back here talking about cybersecurity, AI, and the scams. Robert has been outstanding. You know what? We want to spend this next 10, 12 minutes just talking about how to identify, you know what, some of these scams easily. We already talked about the one where you're getting a text from somebody you don't know. That's easy. You just, you know what? Spam, what do you call that? Delete.
Hit delete.
Can hit spam on it so you never get it again. Do the same thing with the email. But what about the other things that people don't think or know about that they should be doing that could make a difference and put them in a position where they're less likely to get hit?
So I think the very first thing is that this is like a three-pronged process. The very first thing is that we understand ourselves. Okay, so what is it? Shakespeare said, know thyself. I've been telling my daughters since they were 2, 3, 4 years old, know thyself. Understand you. And what that means is biologically, what makes you choose and decide? What makes you emotional? What makes you tick, so to speak, right? And all humans, and I've been doing what I do now for 30 years professionally, 40 years ever since I was a teen. And what I've learned by teaching personal protection, personal security over the course of a lifetime is that we all possess what I call the human blind spot. And the human blind spot is our human, innate, biological need default to trust, okay? All humans, by default, we trust, and that's just the way we are. We are considered an interdependent species. And as an interdependent species, that means that we are dependent upon each other for our survival, truly. Without each other, we would just perish. Man needs woman, needs man, fundamentally to procreate, to further the species. That's it, right? And so the basis of that is that man and woman, they got to trust each other in order to get with each other, so to speak, right? And so all day, every day, the people that you meet, that you come in contact with in person, the people that text you, call you, and email you, you want to, as a human, biologically and psychologically, trust them. You want to give them the benefit of the doubt. That is your first basic instinct, okay? Not trusting others is not actually normal, meaning it's not our default. Not trusting others means that we need to recognize risk. We need to think that there are predators and thieves, sociopaths and psychopaths that are out there that want to hurt and harm us. That is what security is about, is recognizing risky behaviors and doing something about it. We don't want to even think that those people even exist, that they would even target us to begin with. So knowing that you are an interdependent species, that you possess the human blind spot, this biological short circuit where our innate need to trust overrides our analytical intelligence and our suspicion, okay? And so in 3 decades in the trenches, I've seen how this instinct creates a dangerous action bias. And when criminals manufacture urgency, whether through an email, a phone call, a text, through a voice clone, a kidnapping scam, a deep fake CEO request. They aren't hacking your computer. They're hacking your biology. Okay. So the human blind spot is our psychological instinct to trust the familiar. Ultimately, that cognitive gap, like I mentioned, it overrides our digital suspicion. Understand that about yourself first, so that when you get the phone call in the email in the text message, and it's saying, hey, we've just approved a PayPal payment from your account to go to eBay for these car stereo speakers. If you don't agree with this payment, you've got to call the 888 number in the email. That is manufactured urgency. Whoa, I didn't make a payment to PayPal. I didn't buy any speakers. I'm calling the number, which is exactly what they want you to do. They want you to get all emotional. You're trusting that email is real. You don't understand that a sociopath just sent it to you. So first and foremost, you need to recognize that about yourself, which is the beginning of recognizing risk. And the way that we do this is we become what I call a strategic human firewall. A firewall is designed to block traffic on your device, right? A human firewall is designed to block deception. Designed to block deceit. It's you understanding and recognizing risk, understanding and recognizing that scam. We need to move into analytical thinking when the phone call comes in, the text message or the email. We engage in the strategic human firewall as a permanent governance mindset. It shifts us from being a liability to becoming a proactive human sensor network. Essentially, the foundation of this firewall is what I call the AAA protocol, right? So Steve, I'm betting already to a degree, you're already a strategic human firewall, which means that When the phone rings, you get a text message, you get an email, you see the text and it's okay. Your state's registry of motor vehicles is sending you an alert that your driver's license is going to get suspended unless you click the link and pay the fine. I'm sure you look at that and go, yeah, no, your BS radar is up. You're not engaging in that. You're looking at that going, no, that's not nice try, right? That's what everybody should be doing right now. Right. Not going, maybe it is the registry. Maybe it is PayPal. Oh, maybe it is. But no, it's not. Don't engage in any of that stuff ever. Right. So the AAA protocol is all about analyzing, authenticating, and then acting. Right. Essentially, it's recognizing the manufactured urgency. Right. It's an intellectual filter. It's the moment a request demands secrecy or immediate action. Stop what you're doing. Your brain is being forced to move into emotional reaction. Take a breath and move back into analytical thinking. Force a conscious pause. Recognize that your gut reaction or emotional panic is a psychological trigger through manufactured urgency designed to cloud your judgment, right? If an interaction sparks sudden fear or urgency, that is your emotional drive being exploited. What they do is brilliant. It's awful what they do, but it's awesome what they do. It's awesome what they do. Look, at snake oil salesmen have been around for hundreds of years. Today, they're just a bit smarter. They're just a bit more advanced. They just have better tools at their disposal. All you need to do is recognize the snake oil salesman for the wares they're selling, what their motivations are, and really just become that strategic human firewall. And then authenticate, identify the digital mask. Engage your intellectual filter immediately. Step back, scrutinize the communication channel, strip away the emotional narrative, and look for objectively, say, the digital masks or deep fakes or red flags hiding behind that digital persona. Okay? Hang up, call the person back at a trusted number, go to Google, research it, pull up your AI engine, search whatever just happened to you, say, is this real? Is this fake? And so forth. Be objective. Don't be emotional, be analytical, right? Look at, in every presentation that I do, people, they're afraid, they're worried, they're scared. I say, listen, this stuff is easy. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand this stuff. Everything that you want to know is at your fingertips. You do a quick search. What does this mean? Is this real? Is this fake? What should I do here? Before you emotionally act, the act of actually thinking it through, stopping and searching it, means you're already becoming a strategic human firewall, opposed to emotionally going, okay, what do I do now, scammer? How do I pay you, scammer? Which is what I see happen all the time. 5 hours later, the mother has already exhausted every single investment that she has to get her daughter away from harm because she thinks she's been kidnapped. And then when the daughter doesn't show up at the grocery store where the kidnap exchange was supposed to take, she calls her daughter's cell phone. Her daughter's like, yes, well, mom, what's going on? She says, where are you? I'm at work. Why? What's happening? What do you mean what's happening? What, you didn't get kidnapped? Mom, what are you talking about? All the mother had to do was stop and call her daughter at work. Instead, she got involved in a 5-hour circuit running around like a crazy person to MoneyGram, to Western Union, to a bank. It's just awful what they do. It doesn't have to be like that.
I think that's really well put, is to stop and think and be analytical as opposed to be emotional. Because most of the people I've talked to who have been in that situation, it was emotional that helped them make that decision, especially with the romance scams and those type of things, which are all money scams anyways.
But, all boils down to the mighty buck.
Yeah. Robert, I want to thank you for being here. You know what? A lot of people are going to probably wonder, hey, how do we get a hold of Robert? Maybe come to go to one of his events. Would you mind providing your LinkedIn, your website?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. I'm all over the Google, right? So just search Robert Siciliano, S-I-C-I-L-I-A-N-O. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I give it all away for free every couple of weeks. And otherwise, my website is protectnowllc.com, protectnowllc.com.
Robert, I want to thank you for being here and sharing this. There's just a ton of little ahas that everybody's going to get because they just didn't realize how basic and human nature is and how it actually could affect whether they keep their money or not keep their money. So folks, with that, I'm going to let you go. I hope you have a wonderful day. Thanks for joining us right here with Robert Siciliano talking about how to protect yourself with AI and scams. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week right here on Saving with Steve.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.